the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, our next guest is a big believer that we need to look at the environmental crisis through an economic lens, not only from the perspective of big business and governments, but also in terms of the daily decisions we make about how we choose and what we choose to buy. Typically, a quarter of wealthy countries' emissions come from households. And in her books, Environomics, Darshini David takes us through changes we could make to reduce consumption, for instance, buying less mobile phones and fast fashion. Darshini, when it comes to the climate change crisis, we have to strike a balance between what we want to do and what we need to do. Do you think when it comes to the messaging to consumers, particularly in the West, that this can be done in a pain-free way? Or should the messaging be, this is going to cost you, it's going to be painful, and you're going to just have to do things differently?
Yeah, Richard, I think you've hit the absolute nail on the head there, because the reason I wrote this book in the first place is because we talk about, we want to get to this, you know, this is our target. We don't talk about how we're going to get there or what it is going to cost us or actually where things may actually deliver us some savings along the way, right? So what I've tried to do is say, well, there are some things that we've been through a pandemic, we've been through a crippling energy price shock in the last few years. So there are some things out there which are going to feel even more remote when you're talking to people. You know, go out and buy an electric car, put a heat pump in. That's going to feel out of reach to, frankly, the majority of households, given what we've been through in recent years. But then you see some of the things that have happened in recent years. Now, for example, the thing with the energy price shock, for example, is we all saw our energy bills soar, didn't we, across Europe. And what we did is we turned down the heating a bit and we changed our habits. And, you know, there's a reason why Vinted, for example, is now a $1 trillion company, because we are talking about changing our habits. So there's some things which you can do which won't cost you money, which will actually save you money. And there are some things which, yep, we are going to at some point have to bite the bullet and decide how we go about making some of the bigger changes that do need to be made to get there.
The incentives, the carrot or the stick to get consumers in our behaviour to do things differently. One is to make things a bit more expensive. Another is to have the likes of carbon taxes. Do you think that that kind of approach will work and will be enough?
I think there are various changes that will make a difference. You know, and you talk about carrot and stick, and I think there will be a fair amount of stick in this. But just have a think about how it goes down with voters when you start talking about things like, for example, putting taxes on petrol. We don't want our lifestyles interfered with. There are some things which politicians, regardless of party or regardless of what else they're worrying about, think this is something that is too sticky to get a grip on. So whereas taxes would take us a great way of the way there and change behaviour to a certain point, I don't think realistically we're going to see that kind of level happening. I mean, another example for it is a tax on clothes. I mean, you know, we wear five times as many clothes as we did in the 1980s. And I don't know about you, but there's things in my wardrobe I know I never get to, but clothes have got a lot cheaper. Now, one of the solutions has been suggested is a tax on clothing. But again, if you talk to retailers, they say, hang on a minute, it's not our job to stop you buying new clothes. And governments say, well, why should we do that? We know it'll annoy voters, particularly, let's face it, younger ones.
People will also say, ultimately, big business are the polluters in many respects. They'll say, whether it's in the energy, the oil industry, whatever it is, they're the ones who should pay. We shouldn't pay. Governments will say, look, we have to regulate. We have to have laws here that are going to nudge people and businesses or force people and businesses into a particular direction. But what do you say when someone says, it's the polluter who pays? This should all be dealt with at the manufacturing stage.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, isn't it? It's a case of, well, the polluter pays, but ultimately the consumer will pay too, right? But it's an interesting one because speaking to, say, energy generating bosses about fossil fuels, and, you know, they are all changing their behaviour, perhaps more slowly in some cases than we'd like to see or you know, we'd hope to see. But there is change happening. But if you talk to them behind the scenes, one energy boss said to me, well, there is a demand out there for my product. Why on earth wouldn't I keep producing right? Because there's people out there who want to buy it. And so ultimately, the incentive comes from people's changing behaviour and asking the right questions.
Or from governments changing the rules and saying, we're not going to give you a licence to dig up any more of it.
Yes, totally. I mean, there is obviously a growing movement towards that. But then what we've seen happening in recent years, if there's not enough product on the market, then you get to a stage, or concerns about the product on the market, you get to a stage whereby we see prices spiking. And, you know, we've heard a phrase in the last few years that I hadn't heard for years before, which was energy security. But when you get those kind of shocks as well, what is encouraging is you do see the right kind of change happening in terms of investment being propelled into renewable sources as well.
As an economist, and it's interesting because you approach the book, you know, not necessarily as an environmentalist or an environmental lobbyist, or it's very much with an economist's eye. And you point out that, you know, the reality that all of this stuff, a lot of it we don't really need, but we like buying and continue to buy because we can and it's affordable for a lot of people in certain parts of the world. If we stop buying it elsewhere in the world, people will lose their jobs. And that in turn can lead to a bigger economic challenge.
Totally. And I think this is one of the things I highlight very early on in the book, is that when we talk about globalization, for example, we know that it's had an immense impact in lifting people out of poverty in some parts of the world, for example. So, you know, our habit when it comes to buying stuff actually does help livelihoods thousands of miles away. And that has been one of the benefits, although, you know, it has very different impacts on different communities around the world. But this is the tricky thing, because when you're talking about buying less gadgets or buying fewer items of clothing, who is going to pay the price? Is it going to be someone ultimately in a factory on the other side of the world who has managed to get themselves out of poverty and this is their only avenue for a livelihood? It's a really tricky one indeed. So buying less stuff, yep, definitely has its downsides. And don't forget, when we measure economic success, we're talking about the amount of stuff we buy or produce. So that too is something I delve into, because, you know, more, as far as we're concerned, on the economic charts of well-being is better. But there's a flip side to it. So it's not just about quantity, it has to be about quality.
There is an argument as well that says 20% of the world's population is using 80% of the world's resources. Is there a sense in which, you know, the West or the Northern Hemisphere, or whatever way it might be described, has had the benefits of polluting the planet, and now it wants everybody to take some of the pain?
Take some of the pain. And the message, what I hear from some of those people who are working in countries which are climbing up the ladder, is we're getting the message, don't do what we did. You know, you have to find a way of making a better lives for yourself, but without doing what we did. And we're telling you, you can't do that, which is a really, you know, difficult message. But because of the way technology is now spreading, and this is why I'm quite hopeful, is that those countries which are developing and are somewhere behind us are actually able to do that in a cleaner fashion, perhaps, than they might have been able to a few decades ago.
What do you see? You've looked at this. You've looked at it around the world. You've looked at the economies and different sectors and their connectedness and the challenges. What do you see as the positives out there in terms of changes that are happening?
There are positives, and it can be really hard to feel like that, because all we hear are, we're going to miss these targets, we're not doing enough. But just looking back on those 3 or 4 years and the progress that has been made and the mindset changes that have happened, and the way that businesses are starting to look at things in a different way and knowing they will be caught out if they make misleading claims and there's nowhere to hide, is really encouraging. So we are seeing a change in attitude, which has been driving change. We're seeing a change in attitude from governments, which, yes, there's some things that have been shelved, particularly amongst a cost of living crisis. It's inevitable that some things will be put aside. But, you know, along the way, we've found a way of doing things in a better fashion as well. I mean, you know, we're not talking to each other face to face, which obviously does have its drawbacks. But on the other it does mean that you're not having to make a journey to someone. We are now the Zoom generation, whether we like it or not. Remote working, whether we like it or not, has become a way of working. You don't get on a plane to go and, you know, have a couple of meetings, get back on the plane at the end of the day necessarily.
I might have driven to this interview in a massive polluting vehicle, and I'll go in and buy a load of cheap clothes when it's over. Anyway.
Well, that is your choice. I mean, that's what my book is all about. It's about choice. You know, I'm not telling people what to do. I'm saying these are the choices. These are things to be aware of. And if you want to make a difference, there are things you can do. But ultimately, it is about choice.
Well, I don't think I will actually go off and buy a load of cheap clothes. Now the interview is finished. Darshini David, author of Environomics, How the Green Economy is Transforming Your World. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you.